All financial advice provided on this show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The financial ideas and strategies discussed are only provided as a starting point for a conversation about money matters. With regard to your particular investments and financial strategies, consult your financial planner, CPA, or investment professional. All your financial decisions are yours and yours alone to make and subsequently are solely your responsibility. The information that is supplied through the context of the radio program and any repurposing of its content by the host or network is a combination and collection of solid financial investment understanding, opinion, and comments. This network, show, and its host are not liable for financial strategies, outcomes that you employ in any manner that result in any kind of loss. Shares of corporate sponsors may be the subject of buy or sell recommendations in Jay Taylor's newsletter in accordance with Jay's objective opinion.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. This hour will help investors fix issues and achieve personal gain. Now, here's your host, Jay Taylor.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm talking to you from the borough of Queens. It is the 19th day of July, 2022. We do want to thank all of you for listening to the show, making it one of the more popular shows in the Voice America Business Channel. Also want to thank you and encourage you to send along whatever comments you have about this show. It's helpful to us to know what you're thinking and what you would like to hear. Send those along to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com, questions4taylor@gmail.com. We do want to thank our sponsors. This week's sponsors are Irving Resources, Noble Resources, Eloro Resources, SK Mining, Timberline Resources, and Lion One Metals. I've titled today's show, Is Central Bank Gold Price Rigging Just a Conspiracy Theory? Chris Powell, Dr. Quentin Henning, and Michael Oliver return this week. On August 15, 1971, President Nixon detached gold from the world's monetary system, and there about the same time he declared, "We are all Keynesians now." By so doing, he set the stage for massive amounts of inflation, not only in consumer prices, but in stock and bond prices that served to siphon wealth away from the middle class to the billionaire class, to an extent even greater than that of the robber baron period of the 1920s. To con the world into using an intrinsically worthless dollar after 1971, the Nixon administration used the U.S. military to protect the power of Saudi Arabia, the royal family, in exchange for requiring gold be sold in dollars, that is, requiring the Saudi Arabians to force OPEC to sell all of their oil in U.S. dollars, thus putting a prop or a bid under the U.S. dollar, allowing it to have value that it would not have had otherwise. But even with a dollar propped up by oil and the U.S. military, during times of market tumult, investors instinctively opted to exchange their dollars for gold, which posed a threat to dollar hegemony. As a result, the Bank for International Settlement, or BIS for short, which is known as the Central Bankers Bank, arranged for major banks in the Western world to suppress the price of gold during times of chaotic market conditions to retain confidence in the dollar by suppressing the price of gold until market conditions would return to normal. If gold were to surge dramatically higher during such times, investors and citizens in general would trash the dollar in exchange for real money, money with intrinsic value like gold or perhaps silver. But that would kill the ambitions of our military-industrial complex to expand the American empire. Recently, a consummate insider in the London gold bullion market, Peter Hambro, went public explaining how the BIS has been rigging gold markets using bullion banks paper gold, or the futures markets, in other words. But long before Mr. Hambro discussed the nasty behavior of the rich and powerful to subdue the middle class, Bill Murphy and Chris Powell created a nonprofit organization known as the Gold Antitrust Action Committee, or GATA for short, to make the world aware of this clandestine operation of theft. Chris will be with me in the second half of today's show to explain how the elite have been picking the pockets of average folks for many years by suppressing the price of gold, and how they are continuing to do so even more aggressively now at a time when the world faces unprecedented financial and economic issues. A company that is working hard to begin gold production, that is, production of real money, is Lion One Metals. Its Tuvato mine is what Quentin Henning has identified as an alkaline deposit, which are among the largest and richest gold deposits in the world. Lion One is moving towards production, and at the same time is discovering incredibly higher grades of gold as it drills deeper underneath the existing deposit. So it's a very exciting story that Quentin will be with me right after our first commercial break to give us an update. But right now, I'm happy to tell you that Michael Oliver is back with me once again. Thanks for joining me, Michael.
Hi, Jay.
It's always good to have you. I understand from the sweltering peaks of Colorado, you're up in the highlands, but even there you're having a heat wave, I understand.
Yeah, it's fine. You know, it's very low humidity here.
That does make a difference, but if you have 120 degrees, it's hot no matter how much you... Anyway, you know, everybody wants to know about the gold markets. I mean, not everybody. People that listen to this show, most of them are interested in the gold markets. Many of them have investments in the gold shares as well as the bullion. In one of your, I think your weekend missive, you talked about 1673 as being kind of a key number. I think it was the lowest number of the last couple of years for gold. Do you think gold will hold that?
And it's interesting to me that silver took out the range lows of the last 2 years, ever since the summer 2020 high. It had established lows in the 21.5 level about three times. And it blew through that about a month or so ago and dropped down to 18. You know, now we're in mid-18, 19 level. Same with the gold miners. They had GDX, for example, had a bunch of lows after its summer 2020 high. They were all sort of horizontal, and it popped them out. But gold didn't. Gold had two major lows since the summer 2020 high. Both of them were under 1,700, March 2021 low, which we circled and called it as the low, was 1673. Mm-hmm. And so far, despite the break in so many assets, including silver and miners, gold hasn't touched that low. And it looks to us via our metrics, I'm talking right now a shorter term, intermediate term, which is the way to analyze this particular decline that's been underway since March, look like they're about out of gas on the downside. And it wouldn't take, I'm not going to, our reports specify numbers, but, it wouldn't shock me. If later this week you're back above today's highs, you've probably seen the low. Now, what does that mean? Well, it means that probably the intermediate decline within the range of the prior 2 years, not violating the low of the range, for gold that is over. And in hindsight, we'll look back and say, well, gee, I never even broke through the bottom of the range, like, despite so many assets collapsing in large double-digit percentages. Right now, gold's down $100 on the year, thereabouts. What's that at, about 5%? Compare that to any other asset in the world. Or, you know, it's hard to find something like that. And if gold does hold here and start to turn, we also have some metrics on silver and the miners that suggest they could turn. And our bet is that if gold, in fact, does hold here within the range of the past 2 years, that the miners and silver will outpace it on the upside again. That's what they usually do. When gold's up, they're up more. When gold's down, they're down more. That's just the way it is. And I think that rubber band will snap back the other way quickly for the silver and the gold miners. The bigger issue right now, I think, for gold is this. I think it's a good idea to perhaps compare the synchronicity of the stock market and gold, and to some extent the foreign exchange markets. Yes, the dollar's been strong, but it just recently collapsed three full points on the dollar index in a matter of four trading days. So it's a very sharp drop. We think it's probably topped and could come down hard, meaning the euro and the yen are finally beat up. A lot of these trend actions by the euro and the yen to the downside, upside the dollar, also the downside in the S&P and the downside in the monetary metals, is based on a common assumption. And what's that assumption? The Fed's going to tighten forever, they're going to break inflation, et cetera, et cetera. Well, people believe in the Fed on both sides. We don't. We think the Fed is playing their last game in history. They've only been around 100 years. Don't bet on them being around 5 years from now. The reason is, and this is something most people don't focus on. In fact, I've not heard it focused on any of the financial channels. A dozen-year stock market bubble of unseen proportions in U.S. market history has topped. That bubble in asset prices, a sevenfold gain in the S&P over a dozen years, a 16-fold gain in the NASDAQ 100 over a dozen years, is fully reflective of the Fed funds chart going down to zero effectively over that period of time and staying there, and the M2 chart going off the page. You can almost lay the M2 chart on the S&P. That bubble is breaking for the S&P because it needed, first of all, it was finally priced itself beyond. And once bubbles like that break, and again, this, there's no comparison. The dot-com top, the 2007 peak, the real estate peak, none of the bear markets, the bull markets that led to those peaks or the bear markets that followed compare to anything that we've seen over the past dozen years. So when this bubble breaks, and it is in the process of breaking, we expect a lot of devastation that the Fed will have to come in and defend. Municipal bonds, high-yield corporate debt, all kinds of markets will come unhinged as their bubbles break. And that means the Fed cannot stay on the course that they're pretending to be on. And already, if you'll just look through the Wall Street Journal, for example, almost at random, you have news articles and or editorials that are saying the following. The Fed could overshoot. Watch out, Fed. There's a lot of concern that the Fed's going to overshoot. And our bet is they will, in fact, not overshoot. They will probably halt their rate rises. Not maybe this one will be the last one. I don't know. All they need is some economic metric numbers for them to have an excuse to say, okay, we're going to go on pause now and be data sensitive.
Yeah.
And I think that the markets have priced in the assumption that they're not going to be halt the process, and they've overdone it. In other words, the markets have overdone the strong Fed on the downside in the stock market and in the gold market. And once that overshoot has occurred, you're going to get the rally that we're getting in stocks now, and I think you're going to get in the miners, silver and gold, and also the downside in the dollar. All these, I think, are intermediate trend overshoots based on a false assumption of a sustained Fed tightening. And
well,
when that becomes clearer, that's when these markets will discount it the other way. The Fed has to survive.
I think the markets then are betting the same way David Stockman was last week when he was on my show and he talked about he thinks the Fed will remain tight, will remain, with QT longer, probably until the market breaks, because he thinks that they're scared to death of the same thing you said. They're afraid of losing, losing their jobs. The Fed,
of course, is the opposite of what he says. They could lose it the other way by being too tight too long and therefore having people more upset about losing their job.
Right. And I think he's looking at the inflation, the anger that's out there about inflation, the votes that the Democrats are fearful of losing because of it. And that, anyway, who knows? Yeah. Nobody knows for sure, but what you're saying, I think, is historically more accurate, more certainly what we've been seeing in the past. And either way, the Fed could be in big trouble. I mean, if they hyperinflate, they're not going to last either, right? Something will replace
the Fed.
They go,
I think they're in a swirly that they will not recover from this time around. They will lose public acceptance, economist acceptance. You're already seeing rumblings to that effect now about, oh, gosh, they're overshooting. Well, the flip-flopping can't continue, and pretty soon somebody's going to realize there should not be such a thing as a stock market cycle. We hear that all the time.
Okay,
the market cycle, shouldn't be one.
Oh, it's more of a credit cycle than anything. But let me ask you real quickly. We're up. Our time is up, but I just want to ask you about commodities in general. Then they've pulled back quite a bit. You see, this as a correction. But I take it you're still really bullish as I was looking over your work recently.
There's an entire new wave to come.
Yeah.
Bloomberg Commodity Index, I think, is having a correction within an early phase of a major bull market. If you look at the Bloomberg Commodity Index trading now, 110 to 120 zone, go back in history and look at that price compared to where we were in 2008, 2011. It's hardly off the page. We're only halfway back to the highs. And this bull market just began in late 2020 by our metrics. Annual momentum trend. I think it'll probably last another year or two easily. And it won't be just focused in the energy sector either.
So a year or two, I guess, be on the right side, the right markets, commodities, gold, silver, and then hopefully at some point in time when the equity markets actually get their comeuppance and are repriced where they should be repriced, there may be some buys on that side of the market as well. And I will turn to you.
It might be like the 1932 low. You don't come back to your old highs for decades.
decades.
Remember, it was the 1950s before you could get back to the 1929 high.
So, all right.
Wouldn't be shocked
well,
by that
time,
either.
Well, time will tell. Thanks again, Michael, for your thoughts. Always valuable.
Thank you, Jay.
Thanks for spending time with us. All right, folks. We got to go to break, but don't go away because Dr. Quentin Henning will be with me to talk about Lion One Metals. The company's really on to the Tuvatu project. It is really looking great. Higher grades as they dig and as they drill deeper underneath the existing deposit. Very exciting story, so don't go away. We'll be right back with Dr. Quentin Henning.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
Lion One Metals is focused on high-grade gold in Fiji, led by legendary Canadian financier Walter Barikoff. Lion One is permitted for production and drilling for discoveries in one of the most exciting high-grade gold projects in the prolific South Pacific Ring of Fire. Lion One trades on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol LIO and on the OTCQX under the symbol LOMLF. Go to our website at liononemetals.com for more information about Lion One Metals and high-grade gold in Fiji.
Voice America programs are now available on your favorite connected device, including Amazon, Alexa, and Google Home. Through streams with Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio, listening to your favorite show is as easy as saying the show name followed by the word podcast.
Hey, Alexa, play Finding Your Frequency podcast.
If that doesn't work, try adding on TuneIn or on iHeartRadio or on Apple Podcasts.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back, Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really happy to tell you that Dr. Quentin Henning is with us once again. He is a member of the Crescat Capital Management Team and a director, and he serves at Crescat as the firm's geologic and technical advisor. Well, he's been with us so often, I'm not going to read over his entire biography because that would be redundant, but it is very worthwhile learning to know more about Quentin and his background, if you're not familiar with him. Thanks for joining me again, Quentin.
Absolutely, Jay. This is always a pleasure.
It's always great to have you because you almost always have really exciting stories to talk about, and this is certainly one, Lion One's Tuvatu project in Fiji. I would like to just tell my listeners that they might want to pay some attention to the Crescat Gets Active videos that they're live. You can watch them on YouTube at 2 o'clock every Friday. And the reason I say that is because Lion One is one company that Quentin talks about from time to time. A host of companies that Crescat Capital invests in. And there's just a lot of great information if you really are invested in these companies and want to understand what's going on from a geological perspective as well as a business perspective. It's very valuable to watch these programs, and if you can't watch them live, they are available to you on YouTube afterwards as well. So I just wanted to encourage people to consider doing that. I should say, just before we get into this discussion, Lion One trades in Canada, LIO, LOMLF, in the States, 156.4 million shares, trading about $1.08 in U.S. money, giving it a market cap about about $170 million in U.S. money. And so that gives you an idea of the market capitalization, but I think, in my view, really understates its potential value. And so that's why really happy to have Quentin with me. Quentin, the last time we talked, it was about was right after the company's June 6th amazing assay report. I think the company reported a headline number of something like 20.86 grams of gold over 76 meters, something like that. Just ridiculous. And as you pointed out in the past, you know, this is an alkaline deposit, and these things tend to be very high grade, and they end usually pretty big projects that usually end up being produced and, you know, run by major mining companies. Those major mining companies like these big projects that can produce, you know, hundreds of thousands of ounces a year, if possibly. I'm not saying that's what this one will do, but comparing, you've seen many alkaline projects. You've been involved with some. How does this one compare with some of the others you've seen? Does it have a chance to be a multi-million ounce high-grade deposit in your view?
Absolutely. In fact, I talked about this last Friday on the video that you mentioned. Mm-hmm. So we do that video on Friday, and in that, if you kind of thumb through the YouTube video, you can find the page. But I did talk about Lion One and what I think it can deliver. And I do think it's going to deliver something that's going to be of an interest to major mining companies. So to put this in perspective, look, there's some but not a lot of alkaline gold deposits around the earth. But the ones that, like Tuvalu, the one we're talking about here, the ones that really deliver, they deliver bigly. If you look at Cripple Creek here in Colorado, for example, in the historic mines, the high-grade underground mines, they produce around 20 million ounces of gold at very high grades. You know, average grade for the life of mine for all of the mines at Cripple Creek was about a half an ounce per ton, so, you know, 15 grams per ton. And then, you know, now Newmont, it was, look, it's had a long history. Cripple Creek and joint venture way back in the day started open pit mining. It was bought by a succession of companies. Most recently, Newmont operates Cripple Creek and it's produced at least about, I think, another 8.5 or 9 million ounces. Wow. So it's up to about 29 million ounces production. Of course, they're mining the lower grade material now. But, you know, these things are just incredible deposits. Now, Porgera over in New Guinea, which is actually closer to Fiji, and, you know, geologically, I would say it's more similar, given it's in the Circumpacific, you know, island, you know, the Ring of Fire, the chain of volcanic islands. It is an exceptional deposit, as well as very similar geologically to Tuvalu. It is associated with a monzonite intrusion that, you know, basically a magma, an alkaline magma that kicked off a lot of gold, and it's produced, I believe, around 25 or 30 million ounces of gold at this point, has quite a bit of reserves left. It's a joint venture presently between Barrick and Zijin Mining, I believe, and it is absolutely, hands down, a tier one asset. It's produced a lot of gold over time, but it has a lot of life left to it. You know, once again, it's a testament to what these alkaline systems can deliver. Now, right there in Fiji, though, we have a nearby neighbor. It's called Vatukoula. Vatukoula, mm-hmm. Formerly was known as the Emperor Mine, going way back in time. And it's been mined for probably onwards of 87 years, I believe, at this point, something like that. It's produced a little over 7 million ounces of gold in that lifetime. The early days, it was a very prolific producer. It produced, you know, in excess of 100,000 ounces, or I think even close to 200,000 ounces at one point, way back in the day. In fact, it underpinned Western Mining's, you know, mining portfolio. Western mm-hmm. Mining was a famous Australian
right.
company. It was a multi-commodity company, but they did well at Emperor Mine. Anyway, that deposit has around 4 million ounces of reserves and resources left. So, you know, in aggregate, it's a little over 11 million ounces. So right there next to Tuvalu, we have a direct analog. So, yeah, I would say there's a very good chance that Tuvalu can deliver one of these multi-million ounce, very large, very desirable alkaline gold projects.
You know, as I was reviewing that June 6th press release, I noticed that it seemed as though it's still in mineralization at the bottom of the hole and more than 500 meters down, and high grade at that. Do these systems tend to run very deep, and do they get richer sometimes at depth?
They do. They're kind of, I think the last time I spoke with you, or sometime here recently, I've interviewed, and you know, if you think of these things like drilling a tree from the top down, that's the best analogy I can use.
Yeah.
You know, they have a lot of they're fracture hosted or fissure hosted. You know, like the cracks in the ground are what took up the fluids and host the mineralization now. But they, you know, the pattern of these fractures as they come out of the ground and they emerge towards surface, they tend to spread out and become smaller and smaller limbs, mm-hmm. like a tree. All right. So up until this point, really up until about 2020, the company focused on the upper branches. They drilled a decent resource, you know, a few hundred thousand ounces, I think 600,000 ounces and change, in what we call the upper limbs. And then in 2020, right in the middle of COVID there, we swung for the fence and drilled a deeper hole. We drilled a hole underneath the existing resource in an area where some geophysics suggested we might have a structure, potential host fracture for mineralization. That's when we hit that 12.7 meters of 55 grams, I believe it was. And that told us, yeah, there are some bigger branches down there, you know, bigger and higher grade branches. You know, but we've been plumbing this thing, you know, poking holes down there now for about 2 years. And all of them have hit, interestingly, like all of the holes that go down into that deep regime have hit, offsets to that original 500 load intercept. But this one that we had about a month and a half ago just, you know, shot the lights out, as they say, you know, it really delivered. And, you know, within that 70-odd meter intercept, there was 30-odd meters of about an ounce per ton. Ah. And that's the kind of, you know, when I see that, it smells like the trunk of the tree. And, like, it's definitely a major conduit. Now, that said, okay, Jay, that intercept is actually not all that deep. So when you put it in perspective of alkaline systems, this thing could carry on down into the, you know, to the crust for a ways. Like, you know, we probably have another kilometer of runway below this at least. So, you know, we basically poked the upper part of the trunk way, way up high, and there's a lot of potential left here.
Right, and there's a lot of potential laterally with other deposits, I think, along some 7 kilometers of strike, but that's another story. So, this is just tremendous exploration potential, but I want to ask you, with regard to potential with exploration, the company's also moving towards, I guess, small-scale production to start with. To what extent is the company now focused on sort of infill drilling and engineering and that sort of thing to get ready for production? And to what extent is it still seeking to expand mineralization?
Okay, so it's really a two-prong approach at this point. You know, they do have this exploration because this deeper, higher-grade mineralization we've been talking about can have a profound effect on the ultimate outcome of developing a mine. You know, they are now talking about putting a ramp down to these areas where this higher grade and thicker mineralization is to get better access, you know, for both drilling it and then ultimately developing it. Okay, but at the same time, the company is moving towards production. It's actually drilling, doing definition drilling up high in those upper limbs right now, producing amazing results. I mean, just news release after news release, every single news release has many, many drill intervals, infill drill intervals of very high grade. Mm-hmm. In fact, they're seeing higher grades overall in that upper part of the system than even the resource, estimate.
Wow.
So I think that's very encouraging. But the plan is, just like it has been, to develop a modest scale mine, you know, effectively a test scale mine, mm-hmm. at about 300 or 400 tons per day level. Initially, but that could be expanded very quickly. Word here, I guess, would be, you know, optionality is the best way to put it. You know, they have this, you know, crazy upside exploration, and like you said, it's over 7 kilometers across the caldera, but they also have a prospect of building a mine fairly quickly because it is a granted mining lease. They're fully permitted. They're all ready to rock and roll. And so I think, this is one of the markets, the gold market's struggling, right? It's been difficult in watching even a great story like this. You know, kind of it's been up lately, but it's not been like, you know, like we had hoped it would be, like $3 or $4 or $5 a share. So, but it is the story. I think it is one of these stories that when the gold space does come back around is absolutely going to kill it for a lot of investors. So I'm, you know, in spite of the malaise in the gold market, sounds like Ukraine sold a bunch of gold, God forbid. But anyway, I think this is one to keep a close eye on, put some money in. It's cheap now. It's not, gold's not going anywhere. 2 years from now, you'll be laughing. You'll be very grateful you did.
Well, I believe that's probably true. And I would like to remind investors and listeners that Walter Burkhoff, the company's chairman, has this won't be his first success. He's had, I think, three others that he's done very well with. And I guess probably developed those projects up to the point where they would be attractive. I think Newmont picked one of them up. I think Yamana, one of the other ones. And so this could be, I think, I would guess that if it's really, really, really big, the company would probably be looking for a Newmont or a Barrick or some major company to come in. And not that they have to. They do have people that can take this thing into production. And I believe they have the talent to do that, right?
That's correct. The team members are exceptional. You know, I've introduced some of the team members to Wally. So Sergio Catalani is the Vice President of Exploration, done a fantastic job. Will Estranga, who's working with him, also came in at my recommendation. But then Patrick Hickey is helping develop the mine. He's the COO and working towards developing the mine. So Patrick is he and I worked at Newmont. He knows how to build mines on islands, if you will. Special, believe it or not.
Sure.
So you have like the A team here at all levels. Yeah, very, very good team. And there were a lot of good existing members too. I don't want to diminish that either. There's a real team in place.
Well, that's part of the optionality, a different kind of optionality. It's important, too. You know, not to, the majors can't just sit back and say, well, we'll just take advantage of these guys. They can't put it in production. We'll walk away and we'll get it for nothing. They'll walk away and we'll get it for nothing. So they can't do that, perhaps, with Lion One. Just one more thing I'd like to ask you about, Quentin. You did mention, as you talked about Lion One, Crescat gets active. In fact, you talked about quite a few companies last week, and you sort of gave an overall view of the company. You also said how much of each company's shares that Crescat was invested in, and I was expecting that Lion One would be one of those that was up there around 19% or 15 or 12 or something. It was a lot lower than that, and so I said, "Wow, this doesn't make sense." But I think it's important for investors to realize that there are times of opportunities to invest, and then sometimes there's just not an opportunity. I mean, it's a bit
historic. If you look at the market cap, when I was advising Kevin and Tavi to begin with a couple years ago, the market cap of Lion One was already $200 million and change. So we did, or they did, participate in a placement at that time. Mm-hmm. It was difficult to kind of muscle in and get a decent piece, but they did buy what they could. And then they have been nibbling away at the market. So, with that nibbling, I think they're up to almost 2% right now. It's not a huge stake, but in terms of dollar, it's commensurate with the rest of our fund because it's around, say, call it $4 or $5 million in value, Canadian. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, our fund basically manages about 200 and some odd million, so like 220. Mm-hmm. I think right now. So, in that perspective, that's kind of where we want it. We got about 90 companies in our portfolio, and we do play in a lot of stories. Now, some companies, we got in earlier, so they're the ones we typically have that 19% in because we got in cheap and early.
Yep. Right, exactly. And some of those are very, very exciting. You'll be talking about them as news comes about on Crescat gets active. Just one more thing. I saw working capital about $37 million. I presume that's enough in the immediate future to keep Lion One going.
That's correct, yes. It keeps the exploration and progress towards mining going. Absolutely, they're in a good position, especially in this market.
All right, very good. Well, thank you so much, Quentin, for spending the time with us to update us on Lion One. Greatly appreciated.
Thank you.
All right, folks, so don't go away. Chris Powell of the Gold Antitrust Action Committee will be with me to talk about how the ruling elite use the futures markets to keep a cap on the price of gold. Very important topic, but can that go on forever? We'll ask Chris when he comes back. Don't go away.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
Reyna Gold is a newly listed company trading on the OTCQB under the symbol REYGF and on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol REYG. Its flagship asset, La Gloria, is a 24,000-hectare district-scale property in the prolific Mojave Sonora megashear in Mexico, between La Herradura, Mexico's biggest gold mine by Fresnillo, and El Chonate mine by Alamos Gold. La Gloria has very high-grade sampling and is in the first phase of a 10,000-meter drill program. The technical team is led by Dr. Peter McGaw, co-founder of Mag Silver, and Doug Kirwin, former VP of Ivanhoe Mines. Learn more at reynagold.com.
Timberline Resources is a mineral exploration and resource development company focused on gold discovery in the world-class mining jurisdiction of Nevada. The company's flagship Eureka project hosts a significant gold resource and drill-indicated upside potential at nearby higher-grade targets. Timberline Resources trades in Canada under the symbol TBR and on the OTCQB in the U.S. under the symbol TLRS. To learn more about this district-scale asset with exciting discovery potential, please visit www.timberlineresources.co.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back. Welcome back, Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor. Really pleased to have with me Chris Powell. It's been a number of years, I think, since Chris was last on this show, but it's really good to have him with us. He has been a columnist for Journal Inquirer. That's the daily newspaper in Manchester, Connecticut, where he is. He actually worked there since graduating from high school in 1967. He was the managing editor of the newspaper for a number of years before his retirement. But he is also the Secretary-Treasurer of the Gold Antitrust Action Committee. It's a nonprofit organization that aims to expose and oppose the manipulation of the gold market and related markets by central banks. Thanks for joining me again, Chris.
Oh, thanks for your invitation, Jay.
It's really good to have you. I would maybe just ask you, since you haven't been on for some time, maybe the purpose, well, we just said what the purpose of GATA is, but what how did you happen to get interested in this? I know Bill Murphy played a role in it. And it's one of those things where you're trying to let people know some egregious activities that are distorting markets and hurting people. But why did you decide to get involved in it?
Well, I got interested in gold basically by virtue of a free subscription or a trial subscription I happened to get to Jim Blanchard's Old Gold newsletter, is now run by Brian London. And this was back in 98, I guess. And Blanchard was noting that the gold price was, you know, relatively low. And I had heard somebody say buy low and sell high. So I started paying some attention to the gold market. I quickly bumped into Bill Murphy on the internet. He had just started his internet site of commentary on the metals markets, lametropolecafe.com. And Bill was a former futures trader, and he kept noticing that the gold and silver market seemed to be manipulated. And the prices came to a technically critical point. The big bullion banks would pound on it, and he started complaining about manipulation. And I had some experience in the newspaper business with antitrust law. I also had some experience with it in my studies of U.S. history. And finally, I got sick of Murphy complaining about the manipulation. I wrote to him saying, you know, it looks like there's a lot to what you're saying, but if it's true, it would seem to be against the Sherman Act and the Clayton Act and 50 state antitrust acts. And If that's the case, somebody ought to form a committee to oppose it and hire some lawyers on a contingency basis and sue the bastards for triple damages. And if somebody wanted to start such a committee, I'd contribute $500 to it. And Bill said, hey, that's a good idea. So that's how it started. But really, within a year or so, we discovered it really wasn't just the big New York investment banks. It was basically longstanding government policy being implemented in part through the intermediaries of the bullion banks. And so we were told we really couldn't sue anybody here because the government was behind it. And the Gold Reserve Act of 1934, as amended in the 1970s, specifically authorizes the U.S. government to rig any market in the world. So we were forced to really become a publicity operation, though we did bring a couple of lawsuits, one against the Federal Reserve that actually beat them on a freedom of information point. We still have a picture of the check that the Fed had to send us to pay for our court costs, which is proudly displayed on our internet site. So when they tell you, you know, don't fight the Fed, they're not always right. You can beat them sometimes.
Well, at least you got your legal costs.
Yeah. Well, it was really a technical payment. I think something like $2,300. It didn't come close to the legal fees, but it was a sign that we had officially won the case.
Well, you know, maybe you couldn't beat them legally, but you're shedding light on an injustice, I think, when markets are manipulated. But, at first they called this, of course, the Gold Antitrust Action Committee was touting a conspiracy. And you've made the point many times, it's certainly not a conspiracy. What evidence can you pass along to our listeners?
It is a conspiracy. It's just not we've been accused of a conspiracy theory.
It's not a conspiracy theory.
It's conspiracy fact. The gold price suppression has been the open policy of the United States government for decades. We've collected many official government documents and the memoirs of central bankers, the records of the Bank for International Settlements, which is the gold broker for the central banks. We've got many documents showing that this is longstanding Western government policy. The history books show it. You can look up the history of the London Gold Pool, which was a Western central bank open conspiracy to suppress the gold price during the 1960s with the dishoarding of Western central bank gold reserves to hold the gold price at the official U.S. price of $35 an ounce. That was done in the open. After the gold pool collapsed in March 1998, the central banks retreated to find a new way of suppressing the gold price, and eventually they settled upon gold derivatives and the futures markets, where they could sell a lot of imaginary gold and divert demand for gold away from physical gold and to paper products, which they would never have to deliver upon. And that's really how the gold price suppression policy has been implemented since the mid-1970s. But there's many, many documents of this. There's even congressional testimony by Alan Greenspan back in 98, I guess, when he told Congress that, quote, central banks stand ready to lease gold in increasing quantities should the price rise.
End quote. Right.
Greenspan himself told Congress that the purpose of gold leasing by central banks was not the reason that the central banks were giving to earn a little interest on a dead asset, that the reason for gold leasing by central banks was price control. Mm-hmm. There's tons of this in our archive. If people want the documentation, I would direct them to our internet site, gata.org, and just go to the top left. You'll see an entry called The Basics, and you can click on that, and it opens a big section on the documentation and history and purposes of gold price suppression. All the documents that we have are there, and there's dozens of them, admissions by various central bankers. I think of Zeller-Zylstra, who is head of the Dutch Central Bank and also president of the Bank for International Settlements. In his memoirs, he writes that the gold price was always suppressed at the behest of the United States. There's so much of it there. People really should review the documentation before they dismiss all this as conspiracy theory. You got to remember, you know, whenever government operates in secret to decide on and implement a course of action, that by definition is conspiracy.
Right.
Government is by definition conspiracy whenever it operates in secret. So, you know, conspiracy theory is not accurate here. This is conspiracy fact. It's longstanding government policy. You can look it up.
Yeah. Well, conspiracy theory is thrown out anytime, and as long as it's the mainstream media really hits on it and you hear a lot of it, you say, oh, yeah, it must just be some crazy jerk that's espousing some theory that hasn't any truth to it. But, you know, as you point out, it's well documented, and the government itself admits it. And I remember Reginald Howe, the trial that was up there in Boston many years ago. In fact, you know, the government made its case in that regard. The banks actually that were the defendants. Anyway, I think you just answered a question that I had from a listener recently about the London gold pool. Why it failed? Well, I guess they thought they could just swamp the markets with gold, just physical gold, throw it out on the markets, and it would go down to the point where people wouldn't. They would lose interest in it or whatever. But that didn't work, obviously, because gold went from $35 to $850 a few years later. So that's the reason that didn't work. So what they did then was come up with this paper scam, essentially. And one thing I wanted to ask, Chris, because I just saw this statistic. You're familiar with Mr. Hambro, Peter Hambro, I think, a consummate insider from the London gold market, quite a history, really just coming out recently and telling everybody this is what's going on. The futures markets are being used to distort the price, not to allow price discovery of actual physical gold. Of course, the mining companies have to sell according to what the futures price is saying it is. So that came out, from this guy, Peter Hambro, and I'm just wondering, in that related to what he was talking about, there was a massive amount of futures. The futures contracts, according to what I've seen, has gone up dramatically, with something like normally be less than $50 billion in futures contracts by the bullion banks. But all of a sudden, in Q1 of this year, it jumped to $500 billion. I mean, it's just, if you look at the chart, it's just incredible. And I'm wondering if you have any sense of why that might be. Might it have something to do with the chaotic market conditions that we're seeing everywhere, or maybe, I don't know. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, you know, who has that kind of money? I don't. You don't.
Yeah.
I think most retail gold investors don't. Anytime you see an explosion of that degree, it's probably based on government intervention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the government can create and deploy infinite money, and not only can it create and deploy infinite money under the Gold Reserve Act of 1934. And the amendments that have been made to it, working through the Exchange Stabilization Fund, the government can deploy secretly money in any market in the world in order to control those markets. If you want another piece of documentation, you can just go to the internet site of the CME Group, which operates all the major futures exchanges in the United States, and you can look at its filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission and the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. You can see that CME Group offers something called the Central Bank Incentive Program, which provides discounted trading to governments and central banks that use intermediary brokers approved by the Futures Exchange for trading in all futures contracts in the United States, not just not just financial futures, but commodity futures as well. Now, this program is still in effect. It's been operating for years. It never gets asked about by the financial press, but I don't think I've ever seen any mainstream financial journalism reporting that central banks are surreptitiously trading all the futures contracts and all the major futures contracts in the United States. The program exists. The filings are public. You can do what Gatta and what U.S. Representative Alex Mooney for West Virginia has done. You can ask the Commodity Futures Trading Commission if the commission has jurisdiction over manipulative futures trading that is undertaken by or at the behest of the United States government, or is such manipulative trading legal and the CFTC has no jurisdiction over it. The CFTC will not answer the question, won't answer it, not only for Gatta, but not answer it for Representative Mooney. Now, if that doesn't tell you what's going on, I can't help you. But the CFTC will not answer the question as to whether government trading directly or through intermediaries that manipulates the futures market in the United States is subject to CFTC jurisdiction or not. And since they can't answer the question, I think I know the answer.
Which seems so. Well, the London Gold Pool failed. And I'm wondering if some point in time this system might not fail as well. And I have to wonder if you have any thoughts about Russia and China, which have been building their gold reserves dramatically over the last decade or so. And, of course, Russia just recently indirectly attaching the ruble to gold and more directly the ruble to natural gas. And oil, and also now I understand to food. So unfriendly countries, if they want to get food from Russia, they're going to have to pay in rubles. Likewise, natural gas and oil. I have to think geopolitically, Russia and China must know the kind of financial ruin that we're creating for ourselves through this massive indebtedness that is growing so much more rapidly than income. We're really causing our country, our central bankers are, our politicians, basically to bankrupt our country. Ed, do you have any thoughts about what might bring this conspiracy to an end?
Yeah, look, we know that the Russians know all about what's been happening with gold. Back in 2004, the deputy chairman of the Russian Central Bank, Oleg Mazeyskov, gave a speech to the London Bullion Market Association summer meeting at the Kempinski Hotel in Moscow. The only words in English he spoke were Gold Antitrust Action Committee. Which was very surprising to us because, to the best of our knowledge at that time, we'd never had any contact with anyone in Russia. But as early as 2004, the Russian Central Bank knew very much about Gatta's work. There have been many reports in the government-controlled financial press in China about gold market manipulation by the United States and its allied governments. Those reports are posted on our internet site. So, and these reports came out in the WikiLeaks cables that were leaked from State Department records. So we know that not only does Russia know all about the gold price suppression policy of the United States. Well, we know that China knows, and we know that the United States knows that China knows because the Chinese news reports about U.S. gold price manipulation were cabled back to the State Department in Washington. Yeah. I think every major central bank knows the rigging that's been going on and is probably cooperating with it for good or bad purposes. How does it end? You know, it could end in the so-called big reset that people are speculating about. Yeah. It could end as a geopolitical aggression by some power that resents the dominance of the dollar. Look, Russia or China or South Korea, any country with a reasonable foreign exchange surplus could.
All right, Chris, we're going to have to leave it go at that. We're out of time. I want to thank you so much for that. I'm sorry we have to cut you off, but that is very, very interesting. And people can go to the Gold Antitrust Action Committee. How they can get a list, they can get on your mailing list. How do they do that real quick?
Yeah, go to gata.org, and in the right-hand column, you can sign up for our daily dispatches. And, we try to keep people informed of things that might be interesting to them.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. Well, that is it for this week, folks. Next week, Peter Kraut will be with me to talk about The Great Silver Bull Market. That's a book that he The Great Silver Bull is a book that he wrote, and we didn't have enough time for him to talk about all the great bullish fundamentals for silver, despite the fact that it's been manipulated downward. And another thing I didn't ask Chris about, but he'll be here to talk about that next week. And also Quentin Henning is back to talk about the great Iska deposit that is turning into being one of the largest silver deposits in the world. So we'll be hopefully you'll tune in next week. Until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.